Coming up on episode 16 of Omnivore, a peek inside Campbell's Innovation Incubator, marketing healthy kid snacks, and breaking through barriers with upcycled foods. It's all ahead on Omnivore from the editors of Food Technology Magazine and the Institute of Food Technologists.
This episode of Omnivore is brought to you by IFT's Food Technology Magazine. IFT members receive Food Technology Magazine in print or digitally as a member benefit. Become an IFT member or subscribe directly to Food Technology Magazine at www.ift-omnivore.org/foodtech.
Welcome to Omnivore from IFT and Food Technology, where we explore the intersection of business, science, and technology in the global food system. I'm Bill McDowell. After selling its stake in Acre Venture Partners in 2020, Campbell's Soup Company decided to refocus its innovation energy internally. Using the agile design methodology and an internal incubator, which the company calls Maker's Culture, Campbell's has been able to successfully fuel its innovation pipeline, and the early results are promising. The company's Executive Vice President and Chief R&D and Innovation Officer, Clave Slavchev, recently spoke with Food Technology's Kelly Hensel about this inclusive innovation approach.
Thank you for taking the time to talk to me today, Craig. I was wondering what makes Campbell's internal innovation team a better bet than seeking innovation outside of the company?
Sure. Great question, Kelly. So, you know, this notion of internally incubating versus externally incubating was kind of core to our premise 4 years ago when we said there's going to be a company-wide approach to innovation focused on cultural transformation and then tools and technology. And so part of that was just really being able to have control of our own destiny, as it were. So, you know, the way that kind of works is our internal team, you know, works with outside partners to leverage technology to shape our activation and our innovation. So it's not like we've said goodbye to the external influence or the external world. We've actually connected very strongly to them. In fact, our agile design approach to R&D and innovation is heavily reliant on external partners. And then further to that, you know, inspired by the makers movement, we are pairing this technology with creating this, what I would call a more inclusive innovation culture, to continuously feed that funnel. And that's what we've affectionately called the Campbell's Makers Culture, where we believe everybody is a maker, and we've created the tools and the direction for them to participate in the innovation process, even if they don't have a food science degree or packaging engineering degree or a culinary degree. It really makes it more inclusive. And we use the Insights Engine, which is this collection of tools that is fueled by AI to track and curate trend signals to align on what we call dig sites, then move into rapid prototyping to quickly iterate and move the most promising concepts to development and then market more quickly. What the Makers Movement actually does for us is allows us to flip the innovation process 180 degrees, where in the past, you know, you would start with a focus area, then you would write a concept or an idea, then you refine the concept, and then eventually you get to playing with food. What we do is we play from the beginning, and then we let what comes out of that tinkering and that and what we call Maker's Hive, what comes out of that Maker's Hive inspires the idea that gets us to concept, and then we run it through the ranks that we normally would. So, you know, this approach has meaningfully expanded and strengthened our innovation pipeline, which has really never been stronger and better aligned with both consumer trends, where the retailers are going, and where we feel our brands are strong and have a right to win.
So you said basically you guys start with playing and then you kind of get tinker around and then get buy-in from you know, the people in the company. I know you got the chunky ghost pepper spicy chicken noodle soup kind of resulted from that whole process. How did that start and how long does it actually take to get through the process then?
Even before Maker's Culture, we had adopted agile design as the way to run R&D and innovation. And so, you know, with that, what comes with agile not only is resource efficiency, but comes amazing speed. And so these processes are very, very quick. Case in point, the chunky ghost pepper spicy chicken noodle was really developed and launched within a span of roughly 6 months, and mainly because we had done some what we call flavor banking work coming out of the Maker's Hive on spice work to help facilitate that and get it ready for that rapid launch into the market. Question about the Maker's process itself and how it works. We start off with it, so it's a bit of structured chaos, right, or directed chaos. The brands make a declaration of what the dig sites they want to go after are. And from that, we basically tinker. And so we create what we call dig sites that are sufficiently narrow, but necessarily broad. So the way we'd like to think of it is there's room to tinker and play without necessarily leaving the room, as it were. That allows the work to be a little more focused, but still completely embracing creativity, inspiration, and innovation from every person who participates. And it's open to everyone. We start actually with proxies for food as we get into building prototypes. So that way it's less intimidating, where we don't have folks feel like, hey, if I don't have a food science degree, I can't participate. They can, because of the way we've structured the process. And then from there, you know, the prototypes build ideas and concepts, and we have an innovation advisory board, which are led by the brand and market and R&D teams, that filter basically what we call the weed and feed process. You know, the best prototypes and resulting ideas make their way through the front funnel, and the rest of them get basically killed or revised. So it's a very fast-paced process, and it's been transformational in terms of our front of funnel throughput.
That's so interesting. Can you give me another example of a product that's come to market that's gone through that process? I'm sure there are plenty, but besides the ghost pepper spicy chicken noodle.
So we actually have one in Snyder's of Hanover. So we're launching a limited edition Oktoberfest pretzel ring, which is actually flavored with real beer flavor. The dig site was termed fermentation buddies. And it recognizes the fact that not only is the consumer habit of pairing beer with pretzels a thing, but also they're both fermented products. And so can you play with flavor honors and pays homage to that linkage in both food type and then consumption event. And so we're really excited about that Oktoberfest LTO, which is launching in August.
Be on the lookout for that. It sounds delicious. So you guys have done some, I think with Goldfish and some of the other brands, some mashups between different brands. And I was just wondering, do you have a favorite?
You know, the Frank's Red Hot Goldfish, which was available this past winter, is probably my favorite Goldfish LTO. It has got the perfect expression of the Frank's Red Hot signature flavor, the right amount of heat, the blending of that seasoning system in partnership with that heavy cheese, you know, Goldfish is just wonderful. We've actually got one in market right now on late July tortilla chips. It's called Green Goddess. It's the perfect celebration of what is a very on trend, you know, dressing and dip, which is Green Goddess, with all those kind of summer green forward notes and flavors doing very well in the market as an LTO. We've got a whole pipeline, as I said earlier, coming out of a lot of the Maker's work on LTOs coming. So, you know, really stay tuned. There's going to be more cool stuff to see.
Have there been any key learnings that you guys as a company or as a team have taken away and thus made a change to the process?
We had pockets of excellence within the company. And so we took kind of the best of processes, both internally in terms of how we run innovation and externally. So as I said before, we're inspired by the world of tech that started with the adoption of agile design methodology, which we expanded across the whole company. And that helped, you know, knock off platform development from 24 months to 9 months. So it brought all kinds of speed to the equation. And then, as I said, we've also tapped into the Maker's culture, which another tech-inspired movement really around the area of robotics originally 12 to 15 years ago, now is helping us fuel our front of funnel. So it's really being unabashedly, you know, borrow with pride on where we feel the best innovation is happening, and then learn and readapt has been the playbook, and it's been quite good for us.
Greg Slavchev as the Executive Vice President and Chief R&D and Innovation Officer for Campbell Soup Company, where he leads global R&D, including strategy, divisional product development, and corporate science and technology, as well as regulatory, nutrition, and culinary teams. Learn more about Campbell's internal product development process in the July issue of Food Technology. We'll be back with more Omnivore in a moment, but first, this word from our sponsor.
We hope you are enjoying this episode of Omnivore, the official podcast of Food Technology Magazine. Help us get the word out. Leave a rating or comment on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon, or whichever podcast streaming platform you use. Want to learn more about the topics featured in today's podcast? Subscribe to Food Technology, where you could read more about the people and topics at the center of the science of food. Subscriptions are free to IFT members, or you can purchase a standalone subscription at www.ift-omnivore.org/foodtech.
Welcome back to Omnivore. I'm Bill McDowell. Finding healthful, convenient snacks that kids will crave remains a priority for busy parents as they shop the supermarket aisles. Globally, children's snacks and drinks accounted for nearly a third of all new product launches from 2020 to 2022, according to Innova Market Insights. Food Technology Associate Editor Emily Little sat down with John Harrington, Senior Brand Director at Beech Nut Nutrition Company, to talk about the latest developments in the category and how companies are bringing the fun to kids' snacks.
John, thank you so much for joining me here on the Omnivore podcast.
No, thank you so much for having me. I'm delighted.
So today we're talking about the category of kids' snacks, something that I have definitely seen growing. What makes this category different?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Certainly, you're going to see similarities between adult snacking and kid snacking. But I would kind of highlight a few key differences. So first, and this might be the obvious one, but serving sizes are going to be quite different. So we're specifically designing snacks that are proportioned for smaller mouths and smaller bellies. The second thing is going to be taste profile. So, you know, infants and toddlers are still just starting to develop their palates. The taste profile of our snacks are going to be a lot simpler than you might find in adult snacks. So when I walk the aisles of adult snacks, I see a lot of spicy flavors. I've certainly seen a lot of Flamin' Hot Cheeto flavored things over the last couple of years. Those are probably not taste profiles that you're going to find in a lot of toddler appropriate snacks. Texture is another big one. So we're developing snacks for infants as young as 8 months old. And at that age, again, perhaps obviously, but a lot of children don't have teeth. So the snacks that we develop need to have a really melty texture. They need to be able to dissolve relatively easily and quickly in a child's mouth without much chewing. And then even as the child ages and we start to increase the variety of textures that we offer, you're still probably not likely to find things that are real chewy or gummy or even things that have a really hard texture like pretzels. And then I would say the last one is really in the nutritional profile. And that's an extremely important one for us here at Beech Nut. Adult snacks tend to be quite high in things like salt and sugar. And arguably, those are things that all of us should probably be trying to avoid in our diets, but certainly don't have a place in a child's diet as they're growing. So we're developing snacks really with the aim to establish good dietary behaviors for life. So we're avoiding those types of things. And then really, our snacks start with simple and natural ingredients, things like fruits and vegetables and whole grains.
I feel like I've seen a lot of kids' snacks go towards the functional ingredients, things that are good for brain health, you know, probably because kids need to develop.
Yes. Yes. That's we're starting to see a lot more of those snacks that kind of address some of those nutrient gaps. Things like protein, iron, zinc, choline, even fiber. Those are things that have been specifically called out by doctors and even places like the U.S. Department of Agriculture and the U.S. Department of Health that children are under the age are typically deficient in. And so a lot of the snacks and even some of the other foods that we've developed over the last couple of years have have an aim to kind of help address some of those gaps that parents are looking to fill.
So what trends are you seeing right now in this field?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, typically in our category, we usually see a lot of those macro snack trends that start in adult snacking trickle their way down into infant and toddler and children snacks. So, you know, you mentioned sort of functional benefits. That's certainly a place that's seen a lot of growth in adult snacking. And we're starting to see it into baby and toddler snacks as well. Things like pre and probiotics. Those are types of benefits and ingredients that parents are looking for in the snacks they buy for themselves and are now starting to look for those same type of benefits in the snacks that they're buying for their children. We've seen significant growth in things like plant-based. People are looking for plant-based protein, and those are types of snacks that have seen growth in our category as well. And I would say the biggest one really is in veggie-based snacks. So again, you know, veggies is one of those things that the USDA and pediatricians have identified as a significant gap in a child's diet. And, you know, the USDA has identified about 90% of toddlers today are not receiving the recommended daily intake of veggies that they need in their diet. And not only from experts like the USDA, but we're hearing it constantly from parents. Parents are looking for ways, struggling with ways to incorporate more vegetables into their child's diet, specifically when it comes to snacks. They're specifically asking for snacks that incorporate more vegetables.
And Beechnut just made the Dino Biscuits, yes, that have vegetables. I remember covering those in new products.
Yes. Very excited about that. I think we've been, over the last couple of years, again, looking for ways to kind of address that vegetable gap that we're seeing and that parents are asking for. And so a lot of the snacks that we've launched in the last couple of years have been looking to address that and find ways to incorporate more vegetables into those snacks. So we just launched our dinosaur biscuits, really cute snack that I'm particularly excited about. They're little herbivore shaped dinosaurs. So really fits that vegetable theme. But again, tastes great, but are still looking to incorporate some of those vegetable benefits that parents are looking for in snacks today.
What are the challenges in this category?
So, you know, in addition to working on infant toddler snacks, I'm also a parent of two small children. One of the wonderful things about watching my children grow up is that as they get into sort of that toddler age, that's when they start to develop their own little personalities, certainly their own beliefs and opinions. But if your child is anything like mine, sometimes those opinions basically mean they reject any sort of food that could even have any remote health benefit. So I would say the biggest challenge for us is developing those snacks that parents are looking for that help address some of these nutrient gaps in a child's diet, but also a snack that a child is going to want to choose, that they're going to pick that snack over something else that might be less healthy. So that's what makes me so excited about something like the Dino Biscuits. My kids can't stop eating them, and they do provide some of those nutritional benefits that that we're looking to fill.
That's fantastic. I feel like with kids' snacks, you need to bring the fun and make them want to eat it, not just hand them, you know, a stalk of celery.
Yeah, for sure. And snacks are supposed to be fun, right? So that's an area that we've been focused on to make some of these healthy eating habits and behaviors more fun and make kids want to choose them.
Looking towards the future, how is Beechnut looking at these trends and making sure they set themselves up for success?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I mean, I think it really starts with continuing having conversations with parents. I mean, a lot of us at Beechnut are parents, and so it's kind of understanding what are some of the challenges that we go through on a day-to-day basis in feeding our children, and how do we help address some of those challenges. It's having conversations with pediatricians and with experts and registered dietitians to understand what the continued nutrient gaps in a child's diet continue to be. But it's also watching trends. And like I said, we do see trends in the adult snacking category tend to trickle their way into infant and toddler snacks over time. So one of the trends that is really interesting to me that we're seeing in adult snacking is this concept of permissible indulgence. And it's really taken on a lot of growth in the last couple of years, particularly post-pandemic. And adults looking for snacks that really can have a positive overall impact on their mental well-being, and recognizing that a balanced diet can still include a little indulgence. So that's a trend that we're watching very, very closely. And we might even have a product idea or two that we've been taking a look at over the last couple of years that does fill that sort of need for a treat that parents are going to want to give to their child, but still specifically addresses those toddler nutritional needs that we need to be mindful of. So I would just say, you know, keep an eye out on that type of snack while you're shopping in the store in the near future.
That sounds great. John, thank you so much for talking with me today. And I look forward to seeing that treat soon.
Yeah, thank you so much. I appreciate the time.
John Harrington is Senior Brand Director at Beechnut Nutrition Company. Find out more about new kids' snacks from Beechnut and other brands in the July issue of Food Technology. Upcycling, the practice of converting food waste into edible products, is a hot topic these days, with its promises to create new sources of revenue and develop more sustainable food products. But recently, researchers have reported some roadblocks to its widespread adoption, including consumer safety concerns, neophobia, and distaste with the concept of using byproducts as ingredients. Science and technology editor Julie Larson-Brischer recently spoke with Sargento food scientists Karthik Sajidbabu and Kartik Shaw about the challenges of using upcycled food ingredients when developing new or updated products.
Hi, Karthik and Kartik. I'm really happy that we're able to spend a little time today talking about your recent article in Food Technology on upcycled food ingredients. It's really using upcycled ingredients in foods is one of the strongest trends that we're seeing in product development, probably in recent memory. And I'm wondering if you guys could talk a little bit about what's driving this trend. Maybe we'll start with Kartik.
Yeah, well, first of all, thank you for having us on this podcast and for this opportunity. Speaking of upcycled foods, well, the trend of using upcycled ingredients in foods is driven by so many factors, such as environmental consciousness or the pursuit of circular economy, innovation or health benefits, government initiatives, and maybe even cost savings. It is indeed an exciting movement that holds the promise for a more sustainable and delicious future of our food industry. Allow me to elaborate on some of these. First and foremost, it's the growing environmental consciousness among consumers and businesses. People today are becoming increasingly aware of the negative impact of food waste on our planet. Not only that, they are equally aware that by incorporating upcycled ingredients, we can tackle this issue head-on, reducing waste and minimizing our environmental footprint. This trend is also fueled by a desire for innovation and differentiation within the category. For example, adopting upcycled ingredients allows food companies to showcase their creativity and create unique products that captivate consumers seeking exciting food experiences. If I think about it, it's a win-win situation. Innovation and sustainability go hand in hand.
Yeah. What about you, Karthik?
I would like to add to that. It's not only about sustainability. It's about embracing a circular economy as well. Upcycling actually allows us to repurpose byproducts and surplus food that otherwise goes as waste. By doing so, we close the loop and create a more sustainable and efficient food system, maximizing resources and minimizing waste. Of course, consumer demand is a driving force. More and more people are actively seeking out brands and products that align with their values, which obviously include sustainability. By embracing upcycled ingredients, companies can meet this demand and win over the environmentally conscious consumers. Government initiatives and regulations also push the trend forward. Many countries are implementing policies to encourage food waste reduction, creating a supportive framework for business to adopt upcycling practices. Additionally, health and nutrition plays a great role in this too. Upcycled ingredients offer impressive nutrition profiles, which is packed with valuable nutrients as well.
Well, you know, I really agree with you guys because as Jane consumer here, I'm really looking for those products that offer that sustainability, that environmentally friendly footprint, and upcycling really ticks all those boxes. But in your recent article, you kind of pulled back the curtain and described some challenges to product development using upcycled ingredients. Can you talk a little bit more about those and maybe some of the possible strategies to overcome them?
Absolutely. In the world of upcycled food product development, there are several strategies that can help address like some of the unique challenges that we face. Let's divide this into three strategies and explore how they contribute to creating innovative and delicious upcycled food products. Firstly, harnessing the power of technology is very essential. Utilizing advanced sorting, processing, and distribution systems is a key to efficiently upcycle food waste into new and high-quality products. With the large volumes of waste to handle, investing in effective collection and sorting procedures is like very key, and it's very essential. Some companies are even employing AI technologies to identify and classify different types of food waste, streamlining the upcycling process. In addition, a range of cutting-edge processing technologies is needed to transform the food waste into desirable products. Depending on the specific type of food waste and the desired end product, technologies can be employed, from enzymatic and microbial fermentation processes that actually turn the organic waste into valuable nutrients. And we also have like mechanical processing tools that can repurpose the waste into new products. So investing in new type of specialized machineries is very essential.
Yeah, you're giving me hope. How about you, Karthik?
Yes, absolutely. If I may add to that as well, the success of upcycled food products depends on primarily on consumer acceptance, which is affected by the fundamental taste, texture, how it looks, and even its perceived health benefits. So if we enhance the sensory properties of these upcycled food products, that is a crucial step. By optimizing formulation and processing techniques, product developers can create products that not only taste good, but have an appealing texture. These properties, by incorporating flavoring agents and masking agents, help improve texture, taste, and aroma as well. By carefully choosing complementary flavors or utilizing flavor masking techniques, product developers can craft upcycled food products that are both delicious and satisfying. Now, let's say texture. Texture is a vital consideration in upcycled food product development. Different upcycled ingredients may impact the final product's texture, such as using upcycled flour from cereal byproducts, which can result in a denser texture in baked goods. Developers can carefully assess the texture and make necessary adjustments to meet consumer expectation. Techniques like color masking or incorporating upcycled ingredients into products that naturally have a more rustic appearance can address these kind of concerns and create visually appealing products. If I could quickly summarize, upcycled food product developers can employ various strategies, as Karthik mentioned, to overcome challenges, leveraging technology for efficient sorting, processing, investing in a specialized machinery, optimizing formulation and processing techniques, and carefully considering the impact on texture. They all contribute to creating a delightful upcycled food products that are both sustainable and satisfying to consumers' palates.
Yeah, you know, speaking of those kind of successful products, when you can overcome the challenges, I think you guys noted quite a few in the extended version of your article online about, you gave some really notable examples or success stories from companies around the world that are doing this upcycling of foods and ingredients. You know, they're doing it right. Can you talk a little bit about those? Maybe we'll start with you, Karthik.
Yeah, well, thank you. I'm glad you asked that. There are certainly inspiring stories of pioneering companies that are at the forefront of this movement, transforming surplus food supplies into sustainable and high quality products. Let's just talk about a few of those. One notable example that comes to my mind right away is the company Regrained, a company that specializes in upcycling spent grain from the brewing process. Instead of discarding this byproduct, Regrained ingeniously converts it into nutritious flour, which becomes a key ingredient in their snack bars. These bars embody sustainability, providing a unique and guilt-free snacking experience. Another trailblazer in this upcycling space is Chickpea, renowned for their innovative approach to reducing vegetable waste. Chickpea, through their creative process, transformed discarded vegetables leftovers into flavorful and nutrient-rich hummus. By doing so, the company offers a sustainable and healthy alternative to traditional hummus, appealing to conscious consumers seeking both taste and environmental consciousness. Similarly, the coffee cherry company has also made significant strides in addressing the waste generated during the processing of green coffee beans. With their groundbreaking patented technology, they have found a way to convert the often overlooked coffee cherry pulp into versatile flour. These flour opens up a world of possibilities, allowing for the creation of various baked goods, noodles, pasta, and other similar exciting products while reducing environmental impact associated with coffee waste.
To add to Karthik, you know, I would like to mention two more other companies which does like great innovative work in this space. A company called like Matriarch Foods, they actually work closely with farmers and food companies to salvage billions of pounds of edible vegetables that would otherwise go to waste due to cosmetic defects and sizing variants. So they transform these rescued vegetables into low-sodium nutritional broths and bases enriched with like herbs and spices. Not only do these products provide nourishment, they also help combat food waste issues and like making a positive impact in like schools, hospitals, food banks, and like beyond. Another company to note would be Treasure Aid. So this is an innovative company that actually collaborated with USDA to develop cutting-edge dehydration technology. So with this groundbreaking approach, they convert the food scraps like kale, peppers, beets into like wholesome chips and powders. By repurposing these otherwise like discarded ingredients, Treasure Aid actually contributes to reducing food waste while offering nutritious and like flavorful options to health-conscious consumers.
Yeah, I'm really glad that you guys mentioned some of these companies. They do really have some great products out there, and I'm constantly on the lookout for these kinds of products and that have that upcycling factor, you know, to them. But I want to thank both of you so much, Karthik and Kartik, for taking the time to share your expertise with us today on Omnivore.
Likewise, thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Julie. It was a great opportunity.
Kartik Sajidbabu is a senior research scientist, and Kartik Shaw is a technology principal with Sargento Foods, the Wisconsin-based food company best known for its natural cheese products. Both are active members of IFT's product development division. You can read more of their insights about ways to meet the challenges of using upcycled ingredients in the July issue of Food Technology.
This episode of Omnivore has been sponsored by Food Technology Magazine. IFT members receive Food Technology Magazine in print or digitally as a member benefit. Become an IFT member today or subscribe directly to Food Technology Magazine at www.ift-omnivore.org/foodtech.
And that wraps up this episode of Omnivore. Thanks again to all our guests and my colleagues at Food Technology. Omnivore is produced and distributed by the Institute of Food Technologists. If you enjoyed today's show and want to learn more about Food Technology Magazine or how to join the conversation by becoming an IFT member, visit ift.org/membership. For more in-depth discussion about innovation in the science of food, check out IFT's other podcast, SciDish, on the news and publications page of ift.org. If you have comments or suggestions for future shows, just send us an email. The address is editors@ift.org. For the entire team at Food Technology and IFT, I'm Bill McDowell. Thanks for listening, and join us again for our next episode. This is Omnivore.